For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
I've been doing this for 10 years. How have I never thought of that? Like that, just a tiny little tweak like that.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach, coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. I'm Coach Yas, and today I'm joined by a very special guest, lead under 11s and 12s coach at Foundation Phase with Watford Football Club, Rob Morris. How's it going, Rob?
Yeah, very well, thanks, mate. Nice to hear from you.
Brilliant. Rob, you know, I'm not going to waste any time. Get straight into the heart of the conversation. You know, tell us a bit about your journey, where your journey began, how you got to where you got to today, and we'll go from there, mate.
Yeah, sure. So my journey started kind of back at school, really. You know, don't really have a playing career or playing background that I'd kind of be proud to speak of. So just a, you know, decent grassroots player. You know, you could even question if I was decent or not. People that played with me can take their own opinions. But so never had any opportunities to kind of play for academy or something, you know, or anything like that. But just loved football. It was my, you know, real, real passion. Big Man United fan growing up. So grew up at the time of when the, you know, the glory years, you know, like with Sir Alex and Cantona was a huge role model, and David Beckham, players like that. So football was just my real, real passion. And nothing really kind of lit a fire like watching football or talking about it or playing. Even through school, there was nothing really that inspired me, you know. So I always knew that I kind of that was my kind of number one passion in life. But perhaps it wasn't till later in school, around sixth form time, where I kind of even considered it as a career. So it was doing A-level PE. As part of it was we had to take parts of sessions with some of the younger children. And one of my PE teachers at the time, a guy called Mike Cook, you know, was quite complimentary of the way I came across and how I spoke to the lads, and kind of said that I'd got a bit of a presence. And it was kind of lit a fire in me, really, where I was just like, actually, well, that's, you know, not many people have said I'm good at stuff at the time or something that I perhaps enjoy. So that was really when I thought, actually, you know, this is something that I might want to investigate further. So kind of looking towards university and future careers. So with his support, he was fortunate enough, there was me and a few others. He put on an FA level one course. So through Watford Community Trust at the time. And I think I was really fortunate, maybe perhaps didn't know it back then, but Nick Cox, obviously, who's doing very, very well for himself at Man United, he came and delivered the level one course. He was a community coach or part of the community programme at Watford at the time. And he was probably the first person that I looked at and thought, wow, like as a kind of a role model, someone I thought I could actually do that job. That's something that I could see myself doing in the future. And just the way he was, personality, the way he made people feel, and just that job and what he was doing really stood out for me. So obviously passed my FA level one at 17 and then started looking towards potential options. So went to university, got my FA level two as part of uni. But for various reasons, I don't think perhaps it was just I wasn't mentally ready for the academic stuff at the time. Uni didn't work out for me. I think hold my hands up, I was much more interested in the party student lifestyle than the academic side. So didn't come away with a degree, unfortunately. Ended prematurely for me, which is still a bit of a regret to these days. But came away with FA level two and a couple of other level ones in different sports. So kind of came back from uni, were level two, and then started just applying for part-time jobs. Had a couple of conversations with local grassroots clubs and a couple of other community clubs, but Watford were the one that came back with an outstanding community program at the time, local to me, well organized, well run. So my first kind of coaching job was with Watford in a community trust. So started with that. So kind of really started out with school, after school clubs, PPA cover, doing literally bits of everything, social inclusion. And then it progressed into development centres, which was a kind of slightly more advanced. From that platform, I applied to get on my UEFA B again, at quite young. This was when the back in the days where the UEFA B was regionalised. So I was able to get on one with Hearts FA relatively early on. And so by the age of 21, I'd kind of got my UEFA B licence and I was set up in a position to go.
Just going to build on from that, you know, you talked there about your experiences working in a range of environments, particularly, you know, with grassroots and working in, you know, PE sessions and stuff like that. Would you mind just sharing a bit of insight around how much of that experience has helped shape your, I guess, your journey and your thoughts and the ways in which coaching should look at the moment? And would you, you know, obviously working as a foundation phase coach at the moment, would you say that's an area that you consider yourself a specialist in now, having worked within those age groups for a number of years now?
Yeah, I think the grounding of the experience of working within schools has been huge, and it's really, really shaped me. I wouldn't go as far as to say I'm a specialist, but it's perhaps the age group that I'm most comfortable with or had the most experience with over the last few years. So kind of, if I go back to the kind of previous answer, if you like, as I progressed on from working at Watford part-time, a guy I met through working in one of the development centres, a guy that's really, really helped me out across the my career and journey. I still work with him now, still a very good friend of mine. A guy called Gavin Brown was setting up a coaching company. It was just called Coaching the Community. It actually came under like the Hayes and Yedding banner, but it's gone on to become PSD, Primary Sport and Development, which is a huge now coaching company kind of across West London, Middlesex, those kind of areas. And I got chatting with him and he offered me a full-time role. So from 21, I was coaching full-time. It wasn't necessarily football, but it was in schools 5 days a week doing, you know, PPA cover, PE lessons. And I think that experience in itself, I actually did that job. You know, Gav was such a good, I suppose, mentor and boss, if you like, even though he was perhaps a friend. I actually ended up doing that job for 9 years through until I got a full-time job at Watford. So that experience in itself was huge for me. I think working with a class of 30, you have every type of child you could think of across the year. The ones that love it, the ones that don't want to be there because we're in school, the silly ones, the talented ones, the middle-of-the-road children. So understanding, learning how to deal with these different types of personalities, how they respond, controlling a class, making sure that you're trying to give every person in that class the best opportunity to learn, you know, to meet the outcomes of the lesson, to work through use the direction of the school, the school's philosophy on what they thought PE and sport was. You know, so much cross transferable skills that I learned back then that I still use now day to day in an academy environment. But that, for me, that grounding and those experiences were huge.
Definitely. You know, you talked there about, you know, working in that role for 9 years. So you mind just sharing a bit of, you know, a bit of story in terms of how you ended up in your current role then?
Yeah. So I continued when I got the job working with Gav and the other lads at PSD. That became a full-time job. However, I wanted to just continue my association with Watford, obviously my ambition was always to work in football full time. So it was kind of the daytime stuff, the PE lessons, the, you know, after school clubs was paying the bills, and then the evening sessions. So it started with social inclusion sessions, then it progressed on to development sessions. And then kind of as I progressed on and people knew me and began to trust me, and I used to build relationships with staff members, more doors began to open up. So it went from, say, development centres to then the next step was working for the ladies team. So I was fortunate enough to be in a really good group of staff and working in the ladies setup for 2.5 seasons. So likes of John Solomon, who's now works full time on the FA Female Pathway, Chris Thurston, who is works as player liaison in the academy at Arsenal, Carl and Edgar, who's full time at Watford. These guys I was working with back then, and they, you know, we had a really, really close group of friends and staff, and that was a really exciting time in my career or in my journey. So I started as a, me and Carlin were joint development team managers. It was called reserve team back then, but it's now known as a development team. So we took that team for 2.5 years, one of the seasons. So 2012-13, we won the league. So again, these were the days of competitive football. Don't see that as much in my current role now, but, you know, learned so much in that role. And then again, build relationship with people. People began to trust me, and then a part-time role in the academy came up in the 2013-14 season. So applied for that. Fortunate enough, there was a lot of previous colleagues in the club that I knew. So, you know, when I had, when that opportunity came up, you know, based on those previous relationships I built, and again, that going back to that trust, which I think is really important, I was fortunate enough to get that role. And then again, continued working with PSD, my role increased. So then I began to work alongside teachers as the sports premium funding came into schools around that time. So the direction of school sport changed slightly. So rather than the traditional sense of PPA cover, where we would take the class for their PE lessons when the teachers did their marking and their PPA cover, with the sports premium funding off the back of the Olympics, the schools went in a different direction as they wanted their staff to be upskilled. So my role changed slightly. So I was fortunate enough to be in and kind of take a bit of a lead on that in regards to writing some of the content, the syllabus for the company, and deliver that in school. So working alongside teachers. So that was perhaps my kind of first interaction of actually working alongside coaches, if you like. If you, you know, the teachers and coaches, there is a bit, you know, a definite crossover, but obviously they are considered teachers, but, you know, for that hour a week they were sports coaches. So I was helping them upskill themselves in that. And then again, time passed, and a opportunity, a full-time opportunity came up, and I was fortunate enough to get that role, and I'm now moving into my fourth season in the full-time role that I'm in now.
So just on your role there, you know, lead 11s and 12s, would you mind just talking to a bit about what that role entails in terms of, you know, on a day-to-day specifically, more specifically regarding the transition from those players going from the foundation into the youth development phase, and what you consider to be some of the key things that you're looking out for. And, you know, if at all, how much of your role plays a part in, I guess, the development of some of the coaches working underneath you in that respect?
Yeah, so just to provide a bit of context, what we do is we have four lead phase coaches, each look after two age groups. So 9s, 10s, 11s, 12s, 13s, 14s and 15s, 16s. So we split our foundation phase and YDP at the end of under 12s. So 9s to 12s is our what we consider the foundation phase. So within that, I work in a group, including myself. There's four coaches in the 11s and 12s. So we have a lead 12s coach, a lead 11s coach, and then a kind of floating assistant that floats between the two. I am kind of responsible for what the program looks like. From, you know, obviously have to fit in with the direction of the club. So we have a, you know, a playing philosophy. We have a curriculum like, you know, academies do. But my remit is how that we bring that to life, using the staff and then the players, see what the games program looks like within for my age group, what the tours are, you know, the reviews, the match analysis. So I kind of lead that part of the program. So traditionally, it's the looking at a bit of a transition from small-sided football to what you'd say is the under-12s, their first introduction, if you like, of 11v11. I think that's important that we don't just play 11v11 at under-12. We have to still is a big, big, in my opinion, is still need massive amounts of variety within that games programme just because of all the different needs of the players within that group. And, you know, just because someone has decided that under-12s is the right time to play 11v11, it doesn't mean that's the right time for everyone. So we do have, you know, it's perhaps starting to get them on the stepping stones towards that part of, or stepping stones towards that type of football, which is, you know, very different from your five-a-side 77s. So it's kind of giving them that introduction to that, and hopefully preparing them for the next step for them, which would be progression into the youth development phase.
Definitely. You know, just talking to that, you know, around that progression into youth development phase, obviously working with the 11s, you know, you talk there about the games programme. How important is it, obviously, within that games programme to start to, I guess, towards the back end of that 11 season in particular, start to embed some of that 11v11 fixtures? And I guess, what would you say are the key factors that the players then need to start considering within that as well?
So I think with the for the under-12s, as they move into that youth development phase, I would say that some of the key things is actually just, I think what the big fear is of sometimes is I've played 9v9, but I've never played 11v11. Actually, it's really breaking down what the real differences are, because it's not a huge deal of differences. It just might be, for example, if you played a 2-4-2, now you might play a 4-4-2. So it's just actually there's two new fullbacks in that you didn't have before. But the, you know, you're still playing with a front two, you're still playing with a midfield four, you're still playing with a two central defenders and a goalkeeper. So it's actually trying to make them believe or make them familiar with, actually, you have done this before. You've done it loads and loads and loads of times. But just because it says 11v11 and the pitch is slightly bigger, don't think it's, or try not to think that it's something totally alien to you. Because a lot of the situations you will come up against, or that you have come up against, should I say, will be prominent in the 11v11. So I think that's, if you have a system of play or playing principles that remain the same regardless of the format, that for me is the best preparation. So it shouldn't matter necessarily if you play in 5v5, 7v7, 9v9, 11v11, out of balance, in balance, whatever the format is. If your principles are consistent and the messages are consistent, then you just add in additional players onto that pitch.
And just within that, you know, obviously then just talk to the, I guess, how important it is for foundation phase coaches in particular working maybe the 7v7 and the 9v9 game format, how important it is for them to still relate what's happening on the pitch to maybe the 11v11 stuff. You know, there's a lot of conversations, especially when it comes to the qualifications in terms of the A licence, and even, you know, maybe not so much the B licence, but in the A licence in particular, about how necessary it is for a foundation phase coach to maybe go and pursue it, an A licence, and the fact that it is traditionally geared around the 11v11 game. You know, being a foundation phase coach yourself, obviously, you know, you've done your A licence a few years back. What are your thoughts on that?
I think the game is the game, isn't it? So we ultimately know they're going to end up playing 11v11 at some point. You know, whether that's 12s, 13s, 14s, whenever that may be, you know, if they are to stay on the journey, stay on the path, the game is an 11v11 game. So I think it's relevant to use it as a tool for some context for that learning and understanding, I think it's massive. So you can, but what the way I look at it is, within a particular format, you're kind of zooming in and zooming out. So actually, you know, 7v7 and 9v9 is the same 11v11, but you're just zooming in. You're just making that pitch smaller and the amount of players, but the situation. So it's, yeah, it's important to use it as a tool for learning the game and as a reference point, absolutely. But it doesn't mean they need to play it, because in the foundation phase, we want them to master the ball, that key stages of learning in regards to their techniques, their 1v1 battles, their, you know, their fluency of movement, you know, their decision making, all of those things that we want to embed and get them as high as possible, give them as many opportunities as possible, just simply can't happen with an 11v11 game, because you're taking away those touches, you're taking away those learning opportunities, those decision making chances. But it should definitely be used, I think, as a reference point to learn.
You know, just while we're on the topic of the qualifications and whatnot, obviously there's been a lot of changes over the recent years, in particular with the way that the courses are being delivered and how they're being assessed more specifically. What are you, you know, a lot of people would suggest, and I've had plenty of conversation with people around this, that the qualification now much more geared around potentially the other three corners, away from maybe the technical tactical stuff. And traditionally, obviously, a lot of coaches will be coming onto this course to maybe obtain and, I guess, develop their understanding of the technical tactical aspects. What are your thoughts on that, and how, you know, how would you suggest that maybe coaches potentially do go about maybe developing some of the technical tactical stuff now that there seems to be, I guess, certainly from a tutor delivery perspective, less emphasis on that, if that makes sense?
That's a good question, because I can only really go off the courses that I was on. I was kind of did the older version of the A license, if you like, where it was heavily around the 11v11 game. And it was high on the technical and tactical demands. It was a kind of test of what you know, if you like. I think it's good that we're coming away from that. But for someone that wants to improve in that area, my biggest piece of advice, I think, would be to watch other people work, to watch, go and watch good coaches. That if you want to learn the 11v11 game, watch coaches that work in the 11v11 game. For me, it's, you know, get in, ask questions. If you've got that platform to do so, not everyone does, but if you know, but there's so much resources online on YouTube. You know, there's a lot of good content. There's a lot of bad content as well out there, but there is a lot of good content out there. So to go and research, and like anything, I think if you want to learn something, it's like if you want to learn a new language, you can either talk to someone in that language, like go and watch them and work with them and surround yourself in it, or you can go and learn it yourself. You can learn online, you can do courses. So there is certain ways to do it. But for me, the way I found best is watching good coaches work. And I've been very fortunate in my journey to be surrounded by some really, really good coaches. And I've learned huge amounts.
Brilliant. And kind of just, you know, just to kind of build on that then, you know, when you talk about working with other coaches, learning from other coaches, throughout your journey then, would you say you've had any major influences, possibly in the form of maybe a mentor, both, you know, whether that be formally or informally, or even just a critical friend in that respect? And, you know, what would you say are some of the biggest lessons that you've learned from them?
Yeah, I have been fortunate enough to have some mentors, but like, as you mentioned, kind of formally and informally. I think when I was younger, they were more kind of informal, and people that you could use the term like role models, or people maybe I looked up to, and people whose kind of work I would follow, because perhaps I saw some of my values in the way they presented themselves and how they treat people and delivered their work. But fortunately, I've been really fortunate in the last couple of years. I'm actually on the ECAS course. For people that aren't familiar with it, it's a course run by the Premier League called the Elite Coach Apprentice Scheme. And it's a 2-year degree. And it's basically the aim of it is to work in all the areas that aren't technical and tactical. So to work on yourself, your emotional intelligence, your understanding of self, how to build goals. And as part of that, every candidate on the course gets two mentors. And these, my two mentors, so a guy called Mark Mapletoft, who was just until very recently a coach at Harlequins. So previously first team coach for 10 years, then he moved into a different role into the academy, and now he's just joined the England international rugby setup. And a lady called Marion Howard, who's a business psychologist. And they've helped me no end. You know, if I start with Mark, he's been able to come in and watch some sessions, and I've been fortunate enough to go and watch him work. And it's really good for a non-football person. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's a big football fan, but from a professional point of view, from a non-football person to come in and actually watch me as a coach and give me some critique without a great deal of...
Well, so it's essentially some element of bias, isn't it? If, you know...
Yeah, without the bias. Sorry, that was the word I was after. Without a kind of football bias, you know, in terms of methods that he may or may not prefer. So one of the things he came to me and said was, just, I was watching, it was just a technical session with an under 11 group. And one of the warm up activities we were doing was a real simple one. I'm sure lots of coaches done was just a throw in and pass back little get warm up game. So the boys would run up to a server, server would throw it into them. They would take different types of touches and serve it back into their hands as they were doing various dynamic movements to get themselves warmed up. And, you know, speaking to him after the session, he was like, why would you get them to pass it back to the player's hands, to the server's hands? And he's like, if you're taking a throw in, surely a player coming in would set it back to their feet. He really works around like purposeful practice. That's his big thing, is everything should have a purpose. And I was just like, it was one of those little moments. It's like, I've been doing this for 10 years. How have I never thought of that? Like that, just a tiny little tweak like that. So that term purposeful practice has really stuck with me. And actually something that when I'm planning sessions now and I'm looking at the real detail, what's the purpose behind it? You know, is this, are these movements game specific? Is this, you know, not everything will be, you know, especially in foundation phase when we're looking at ball mastery, but, you know, it might have other outcomes, but as often as possible, can we have things that are purposeful to the game that's going to help them become a better player within that game, hopefully one day leading to 11-11.
I think the key thing you touched on there about that, you know, it being purposeful, and it is the that element of as often as possible, because I think there's obviously there is an element in it where you might need to, I guess, manufacture certain situations just to recreate you know, element of repetition on a specific thing, which means that you might have to trade off some of that purposeful aspect to kind of balance out that or increase the number of repetitions you want in a particular area. But I think as often as possible is the key. I think certainly from my perspective, you know, I've recently had a conversation with another coach around this and how to engage or how to involve goalkeepers effectively within the context of a group session, without isolating them or just having them as bodies in the session, essentially. And, you know, it's just different things about how maybe the goalkeeper serves the ball. If, you know, goalkeeper can be the server rather than just playing the ball in, right, maybe challenging that goalkeeper to use particular techniques that you'd expect them to use within a game rather than just serving a ball in, if that makes sense. And I think even just those little things over time will just give them all the extra repetitions they might need, and that could make a difference in terms of them going from one level to the next, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think that's probably an even better example of the one I used. But now I think purposeful practice, that kind of that one little nugget from that mentor on one day, even just in a little warm-up practice.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com. Kaytech.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Done, you know, hundreds of times, yeah. Or you know, it's just massive. So for me, the mentors have been huge, you know, and it's probably haven't really understood how huge until I've got slightly older.
Definitely. And you said you touched on that you had a second mentor there that, on your ECAS program.
Yeah. So a lady called Marion Howard. She's a business psychologist. She's for me absolutely brilliant. So she comes from a, you know, doesn't come from a sporting environment at all. She's all about the person. So she'll come watch a session or she'll have a little chat with me and I can, it's almost like counselling when we have these meetings. I'll go, oh, this got this problem, this problem, this problem. And then she will just break everything down and make it really simple and give me some models. One of the things that I've been working on her is use of language. So rather than saying, don't do something, spinning it round, saying literally saying the outcomes that you do want, so being very specific with the words that you say. Because if I said to you, Yaz, don't pass it like that, or don't use your laces when you're passing, whatever, all you've heard is laces when you're passing, you know, rather than saying, Yaz, get nice clean contact on the back of the ball, every blade of grass, be more specific with what you want rather than what you don't want. Now, again, maybe a technique isn't the best example. It's like, you know, if you, for example, marking in the corner, you say, don't you lose your man. The instructor would be stay with your man. Do you know what I mean? So just
and
real
how
specific.
How important do you think it is within that, just to kind of maybe add that, can you bit to the start of that instruction? Because I think, you know, stay with your man as a direction, it can also potentially be quite daunting and I guess intimidating for some players to kind of take on board as an instruction. Whereas if you said it as a can you, I think there might be a bit more engagement. I don't know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Especially with the, you know, players in the in the foundation phase. I think you make a really good point there that they are learning and they are trying. So, the you know, can you do this? Try this. Show me this rather than don't do that. Don't do this or must do this, because ultimately you want them to be able to express themselves. Or, you know, we try and create an environment where it's okay to get it wrong. They're not trying to survive relegation. They're not trying to get in Champions League places or win titles. They are learning and trying to improve and trying to better themselves. So it's that, again, a really good example of yourself is that specific language, just tweaking one or two words, the way that information is then taken by a child or a young person can be have a huge different outcome, even though you're asking them to
definitely
do the same
you
thing.
Know, just touching on that then, how important do you think it is then to involve them in that process of that learning? So obviously, you know, there's a lot of talk currently about, you know, things being player-led or versus coach-led and whatnot, but I think a lot of people often maybe miss or confuse rather player-led and player-centred.
Yeah. So, obviously, my understanding of the two different ones, player-centred is you are doing everything you can for the player. So, the player is at the centre of your thought process. And then player-led is the player who basically makes all the choices, makes all the decisions. So, I think it's good somewhere to get a balance of both. What we don't want to do, again, one of the ways I like to look at things is, or when I'm going about something, is how would I feel if I was in that position? So if we're setting targets with players, so if I had a boss that was setting me targets and said, you've got to do this, this, and this, I would respect his opinion as a boss and his expertise and probably go away and do those things. But I might need a bit more help, a bit more guidance and a bit more clarity, and probably the margin of error would be a lot greater. I'd probably get it wrong a lot more. But if that boss sat down with me and said, what do you think? Let's see if we can this. Or, that's a good point. Why don't you try this? And we worked on those things together. And actually, So there was a bit of buy-in between ourselves. I would definitely then, I think, be in a much better position to succeed. So we've made a big change this year where we are having meetings again in this lockdown period over Zoom with the boys to create their targets themselves with our guidance. So player led in terms that they've got some or a certain degree of what they think based on their previous year. So we want to consolidate the previous year's learning for them, what they think they want to get better at and improve on. But also a player-centered approach from us is actually that we're going to put you have to understand that what we're doing is best for you, but we also want to help you with our expertise and give you some guidance based on similar players we've seen with your attributes that went on and did this, or some coaches that have actually been through that experience themselves as a player. So I think it's really important to find the right balance. Different people are going to need the scale at different ends of it, different ends of the spectrum. But I think it's important to find the right balance between the two for the individuals.
Just on that, then, you talk there about, you know, players maybe setting their own targets and reflecting on their own journeys in terms of where they think they are and hopefully where they want to achieve or rather get to. What are some of the things that within that you feel like are crucial to help the player in, I guess, developing an effective self-awareness tool or self-reflection tool?
I think, again, we've put in a self-reflection tool and targets are perhaps one becomes for the other, doesn't it? I suppose what we've done this year is probably understood that we still have a lot of work to do in that area. So it's perhaps this lockdown period has been able for us as a group of staff and a group of coaches be able to open up a lot of dialogue around that and come up with quite a few ideas around actually how we can help the players move forward. So what we've done is, like I said, we've now put in place these conversations around their targets. So they are within a framework. So it is we've asked the boys to come up with a season-long target from base one technical, one physical, tactical, psychological and a social, you know, based around the FA's four corner model. But we obviously put a tactical one in there because we want to teach them the game and give them that context around why they do and what they do, because it is for the game itself. What we are looking to bring in next season is a reflective diary for the boys. So looking at how they're feeling before games, during games, after games, hot reflection after a game, then going to watch it back, and then having a bit of a comparison between the two. So just getting them to actually, and then after a certain amount of time, we'd like to see hopefully there are some trends. So rather than just kind of what they think, actually, by the use of a diary and they're writing it down week in, week out, there should be some evidence there as to a bit of a picture they can build up of themselves. Obviously, this can then help us with their reviews and their ongoing process. But again, it's just to give them that buy-in, or to get the buy-in from them and give them an opportunity for them to show us what they think. Again, it might, you know, when you're talking to a 9 and 10-year-old, we can't take what they think for gospel, but we can make them feel like we're listening and we are understanding them. And again, building that relationship to then give our guidance to help them improve in the areas they want to improve on, in the areas we feel we can help them improve on in order to
definitely
make them better.
Within that, you touched there about not taking their word as gospel, but ultimately they are at the heart of it. And I think the important thing there is for us to understand it's not about necessarily taking their word as gospel, but understanding if this is where they're at, can start from in order to get them to where we want to get them to, where we feel that we need to get them to, if that makes sense.
And I think there's so much stuff which is going to come from this. Again, I'm only talking, and that's something we haven't done yet, but based on evidence we've seen from other clubs doing it and previous experiences from some of our staff that have done it prior, we believe this is going to be a good idea. I think is, you know, even if what they wrote down as a 9 or 10-year-old was absolute waffle and just complete nonsense, the fact that they're writing it down and they're brave enough to show it and share it, and we're willing to listen that's only going to build that, those social bonds. So there's various outcomes from it. And again, getting them to reflect, you know, it's okay for, you know, for children to be wrong. Like in a, when I used to work in school, if you ask a question and someone puts their hand up, it's okay to say, no, that's the wrong answer. You know, you are the expert, if you like. You know, we do have a certain degree of experience to draw back on to then help them.
Yeah.
So I think, like I say, there's various outcomes and methods to help and guide them, but it's just about getting that buy-in from them. Like if, like from anyone, you know, and I go as an adult, if I have certain targets that I want to work towards, when I've been fortunate enough to work with mentors and, you know, people at the club, they don't just tell me, they get my buy-in. Ask me, what do I think? How did I feel in this situation? What could I have done better there? What's my learning from this situation? You know, rather than just being told all the
time. Definitely. Yeah, just kind of, you know, speaking of development and I guess being, you know, getting to the best possible outcomes, you know, what would you say are some of the things that, you know, hopefully keep you inspired and keep you motivated to keep improving for yourself?
I think when I'm at my best, I can see the opportunity for growth. You know, when I'm really inspired, when I'm really motivated, I can see change happening and occurring, either in myself, either with players, either within the environment. You know, it's not all the time, and I'm going to be honest, I'm a human, and you know, some days I am significantly less motivated than other days. And those are days where you have to show that resilience and, you know, being able to work through. But when I'm at my best, I think it's where there's the opportunity to grow. Now, that might be, like, say, for selfish reasons. You know, when you've come back from a course and you've got some really good content and you want to show this and share it and challenge it to develop your understanding, or you can see a real improvement within an individual's performance or a collective performance, or it might be working as a group of staff. We've got a project that we want to get off the ground, for example, like this reflective diary, or, you know, there's been previous examples in the past, but where it's, I think I'd just like to see things grow and improve and get better. And I know that when I'm not seeing that, I know in myself, and it's an area for my own development, is when things are a bit stale or things are a bit flat, I can get in a bit of a rut. So I, you know, it's, building that self-awareness,
yeah,
to just keep going.
Just in contrast to that, and you talked there about, you know, some of the, I guess, the challenging moments, or rather to build on it, rather, some of the challenging moments. What would you say some of the biggest challenges you've faced in your journey are? And, you know, if you've been able to, have you overcome them? Or is it something you're still battling with now?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't say there's been huge, huge challenges. I think every day, you know, you've worked in football or currently working in football yourself, you know, there's every day presents a new set of challenges because you know, you don't know what mood other people are going to be in. You don't know what, how the boys are going to be. There might just be stuff that happens totally out of your control that you've got to deal with. You know, I've got a long list of things that, you know, have gone wrong. For example, like, you know, people being late, people, you know, whatever. And those that work in football will know what I'm talking about. You know, things can change at the drop of a hat. So I would say a bit of resilience, and actually it's okay when things go wrong, but as long as you learn from it, if you make a mistake, it's okay. And just be humble to, you know, if things go wrong, hold your hands up and go, actually, that, do you know what? I got it wrong that time, or my organisation wasn't particularly good this time. If it's something in your control, if it's a issue out of your control, then focus on what you can control. So, for example, if issue with transport, for example, we're going to an away game and the traffic is really, really bad. You know, there's an accident or something like that. There's no point getting angry that we might potentially be late for kickoff. No point at all, because we can't control that. What we can control then is what happens next, is talking to the opposition, calming the boys down. You know, they might be agitated because they're stuck in a minibus, whatever. Talking to the opposition, look, really sorry, this has happened. You know, we'll get there as soon as we can, rather than just moaning and whinging about it. You know, stuff like that. I'm very much focused on what I can control. If things go for me, brilliant. You know, if there's factors that are out of my control, then, you know, I can't necessarily have an impact on those outcomes.
Mm. And, you know, just in contrast to that, now that in terms of your challenges, having to think back about your journey, what would you say is a time when you believe you did your best coaching?
Best coaching? Perhaps when I look back at, it's difficult to perhaps say the best coaching, because I'd like to think I'm a better coach now than I was years ago, just because of the experiences and the environments that I've been in. And, you know, every time you work, you should hopefully get a little bit better. Even if it's 1%, you should be getting a little bit better. The most, perhaps one of the times I'm most proud of would be when I'd look back at the time I spent with the ladies as the development team manager, and that year that we won the league. You know, anyone that's worked in reserve football or development football, whether that's as a 23s coach or reserve team manager, know that there's massive challenges about that transition from youth football to the first team. You might lose players that you're preparing for a game for. You know, the first team might come and pick your best two players. There was so much that I learned from them, but I think was about being consistent as a person and consistent in my approach. And actually, for the girls at the time, knowing that I would do as much as I can to help them. And then once they know that I care, they are then ready to listen to what I've got to say. You know, I kind of use that saying, people care what you know when they know that you care. I know. And that's when I look back, even when I kind of didn't know that saying or didn't even realize that was a way of working. It's only kind of, you know, since moving on from a few years ago, I've been able to like reflect back on that period and go, actually, do you know what? That was, I'm proud of who I was back then. And I hope that's stayed with me. Those experiences have stayed with me. And I've tried to be as consistent as a person as I can since then.
Brilliant. You know, just wanted to kind of take you to another area of the culture world now, and we've all got them. Just be interested in what your biggest bugbears are when it comes to coaching.
Yeah, there's probably quite a few, but I think the biggest one for me, I think, is criticism without knowing context. So I think it's really easy for someone at any level to come along, you know, look at a session and go, I'd change that, that's no good, that's crap. Or to look on Twitter and go, oh, what a list, that's another session, I wouldn't do that. But without understanding the context of what they're seeing, you know, I like to think, or I like to give people opportunities and for them to show what they do and show what they're capable of and what they really mean when they say something. So rather than me, you know, if I was to walk into the dome at the club and watch one of my, you know, one of the coaches that is in my phase work, and I wasn't particularly happy with it, I'm not the type of person that would go and say, no, change. You know, we'd talk after and go, well, talk to me what you were doing, because I might, if I've not seen the planning process or seen the introduction or seen where it was before that or where it's going to, I only see a snapshot. So it's really easy to criticize, but actually it's like, all right, so now that makes sense. Now you've explained it. So I think quick, short judgments without understanding context. You know, people are going to have their own preferences. They're going to have their own biases. And they're going to have, based on their experiences and their knowledge, they're going to know what works for them and what they think is good. But just because it works for you, it doesn't mean it is the best way. Because there's, as we've seen over the last few years in the Premier League, you know, and there's so many different ways to play the game we love. So many different ways to coach. So many different ways to play. As an individual, and that's why this game is so amazing.
Definitely, you know, and you just talk there about everyone having a different, I guess, way of doing things, and in terms of the way they play, possibly the way they deliver their sessions and coach the players and engagement, and, you know, things that we prioritise in terms of our planning. You know, just be interesting to kind of get a bit more, I guess, understanding and depth around what your personal coaching philosophy.
So I've been fortunate. Obviously, I've worked for, going into my eighth season at the academy. So my kind of how I work is built within the constraints of how we have to deliver. But my kind of personal philosophy, if you like, is being as supportive as possible. So maximising opportunity for the boys. That's what my overriding factor is when I go into plan sessions. So we have like a planning process around achieving the desired outcomes, making sure it's realistic to the game, making sure we're working within, certain areas, timeframes, whatever that may be. But my own personal stamp, if I like, when I'm putting on a session is, have I maximised that opportunity for everyone? Has everyone got the best chance there to succeed? Now, whether that might be including differentiation within a practice, if I've got a big physical player, they might need to play against someone of the same size or stature to get the best out of them to maximize their opportunity. If we've got someone that's perhaps a little bit younger, a bit smaller, how are we that's struggling to get on the ball? How are we identifying that problem that they might have to solve? So just making sure you're going into the details of maximising the opportunity for all involved.
Brilliant. I just want to end, obviously, touched on, you've had a range of experiences now coaching in the various different environments. Obviously, been at, you're coming into your fourth year, I think you said there, your full-time coach at Watford now. If, knowing what you know now, having all the experience and, having all the insights that you've got from working alongside other people, pulling on their experiences and taking away some stuff from them, if you had an opportunity to go and speak to yourself back at maybe 17 and again at maybe 21, when you, started to look at things a bit more seriously in terms of the coaching aspect of things, what would be a message that you'd want to give yourself?
Oof, that is a good question. I think I'd probably say it's just say to myself, be yourself and that's okay. I think probably what I have done, coming from a non-playing background and not having some of the experiences that some of my colleagues have had. There has been times, and probably should have brought this up when we spoke about challenges, I've had periods where I've had low confidence and question myself, is this the right thing for me to do? Am I good enough? But if I could go back and just say, believe in yourself, keep working hard. It's okay to be you, be comfortable in your own skin. Don't try and be anyone different other than yourself. That's probably what I would say to myself, because football, I'm privileged to work in full-time football, and I generally believe that it is a real privilege. Some of the opportunities I've had and experienced and some of the people I've met and worked alongside have been great, but there's been times where it's been challenging. There's been large characters, big egos, and I think that's not really me, and I've thought, is this the right environment for me? So I would definitely say, and this is a piece of advice I would say to all coaches, is just be yourself, be the best version of you, get comfortable in your own skin, and you'll be okay.
Definitely. I guess it was one of the questions I was going to come on to, and I guess you kind of touched on something there, but I was hoping if you were given 60 seconds now to maybe wrap up a golden nugget for everyone else, what that would be. Is there anything that you can build on within that in terms of what you just said?
Yeah, be comfortable. Those few little bits I just mentioned there. So be comfortable in your own skin. Be the best version of yourself. And a little catchphrase or slogan that I like to live by is, it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice. Just be a nice person. And that opens massive doors for you.
Definitely. It's just, Rob, as we start to wind down now, then, I was interested to know, obviously, now you were talking about coming up to your fourth year of full-time work within the Watford Academy and whatnot. What would you say is next, Rob Morris, though?
Oof. I wish I knew. I think in the short term is to finish the ECAS course. So close to finishing that, and hopefully we'll graduate from that. That's a massive chunk of work and something that I've been very privileged to be part of, and certainly be proud to graduate that should I get the opportunity to do so. But longer term, that's something I don't know. I'm not someone that necessarily has long-term goals in regards to job roles and stuff like that. My job is just, with every opportunity I'm given, work as hard at it as I can, be as hardworking as I can, be as good a person as I can. And then I don't know what the next door is to open. You know, I didn't know back then I would be a, you know, a primary school PE teacher for 9 years after doing my level one. I didn't know I would become a, you know, ladies development team manager, then progress to academy, and then got this job I'm privileged to be in now. You know, I don't know what the future holds. I think if I hold too much weight into specific roles and jobs, there's, again, those are outside of my control. I'm not in a, if I want a particular job, it's not because I'm making those decisions. It's because I want someone to make that decision on me. So I'm either going to set myself up for disappointment, or I'm going to get there and then I'm going to be like, oh, well, this is it. I'm here. So for me, it's just keep doing what I'm doing, working hard, and then who knows what the next door to open will be.
Just, again, just on a final note then, you know, still not knowing, I guess, necessarily where you want to go next with your career, but if we maybe fast forward maybe 15, 20, maybe 30 years, depending on how long you wish to stay in the game, I guess, when your career, I guess, eventually comes to an end in the coaching capacity, how would you want to be remembered? What would you want your legacy to be?
Oh, I've got to try not to sound like David Brent. But no, just if I was to, you know, look back and think, if people were to describe what it was like to work with me, if they were to say he was a good lad, he worked hard, he was good at what he did, I think that would be enough for me. You know, whether that's my peers, if it was from a player point of view, someone that helped him, you know, even made him feel a certain way, encouraged, supported, you know, even if they, you know, I'm very, very aware, and as an industry, it's, we're very aware that not all the boys, in fact, hardly any of the boys are going to make it to the very, very top. But, you know, through their time working with me or in an environment I've created, if that's supported them in any way at all, and they will remember that, or they'll have fond memories of, you know, working alongside me, then that's fine for me.
Definitely. I think, you know, that sometimes people, I think, often overlook how much of an importance and how much value and, I guess, satisfaction you can get from, I guess, someone like such as an ex-player that you've coached, or even a colleague that you might have worked with, and I guess the impact you could have had on them as people, let alone as I guess, coaches or players in that respect. I mean, I'm certainly, you know, I've got players who I still speak to that I coached maybe 7, 8, 9 years ago. You know, that, you know, sometimes they'll give me a call or drop me a message and be like, you know, I just remember that time where you did this, you know, and you know, just getting that maybe appreciation and gratitude from that, you know, that's worth its weight in gold, you know what I mean?
It's massive. This business, it's a football business, but we, you know, we're making memories, you know, whether that's tours, training sessions, matches, games, funny memories, sad memories, that's what it is, you know, and hopefully people will look back on those memories that, you know, people that have worked with me or come across me with good ones.
Brilliant. Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Save big money now on new siding from LP SmartSide at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP SmartSide today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.